You wanted the best and you got it. The hottest band in the land, Kiss!
Hello, everyone. It's Patrick here. As you know, if you've been listening all week, my esteemed and valued co-host Jim Linehan is not here this week. Originally, he was going to be on vacation this week, and I had planned to do a Kiss Week while he was gone. And of course, the world got kind of turned upside down. His vacation didn't happen, and I'm doing Kiss Week anyway. So that's the way it goes. But of course, Jim needs a break, and I'm very excited. Today, it's the last day of the week. It's Friday. Happy Friday. We're going to end the week by going back to the beginning. So we're going to talk about Kiss's debut album. And I'm very excited to have a co-host with me today who has been a follower, a fan, part of our community, voice on our show for a long time, going back to the early days. The first man I think that ever uttered the words Thin Lizzy on any of the podcasts Jim and I have done. It's Tom Nuremberg from California. Tom, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Patrick, and I'm excited to be here to talk about Thin Lizzy with you today.
It may end up there, yeah. They started off on Kiss and ended up doing the history of Thin Lizzy. It was 4 hours. But Tom, thank you so much, and I'm very excited to hear your thoughts and insights as a longtime friend and lover of rock and roll, who's always exploring music of all kinds. It's going to be cool. So, as I said, it's the Kiss debut album. So let me give you guys a few basic facts, and then we'll get rolling. The record was released February 18th, 1974. So we're going way back. It actually rose to number 87 on the chart eventually, which is pretty surprising. I actually didn't think it really made an impact. And it spent 22 weeks on the chart in the top 200. So it definitely sold some copies. As far as I could tell, estimate wise, it was about 75,000, you know, in the first 3 or 4 months. And then eventually it went gold after, the band had success. And a couple of these songs came from a period when Kiss was known as Wicked Lester, which was a band that Gene played in. But really, it was an album that was, you know, made by a band who'd never really been in the studio before and sort of, you know, were figuring it out. They were pretty green. They admit that and talk about that a lot. And for all that, you know, it was still a pretty successful debut. And they spent, gosh, probably the next 3 or 4 years on the road. So having given you guys that background, Tom, I want to ask you, how did you first get into Kiss?
Well, you know, I try to think back on that, like what actually got me into them. And I can't really think of like a specific moment where it hit me. But I will admit this, that my first experiences or exposure to Kiss, I was pretty young at the time. I think they actually kind of scared me a little bit, you know, when I
totally.
And that might be what drew me to them, is that, oh my God, what are these guys? These guys are scary, you know, they look like something out of a horror movie. And I'm sure that a lot of people that's what drew them to the band when they were young.
Yep.
The first album that I bought from Kiss was Alive 2.
Okay.
So I wasn't in on those early days. I just was too young, I guess.
Totally. That's like Mike Coley yesterday. He said the exact same thing. That was his first one.
Yeah. And that's, so, you know, it's a typical thing where you dive in at the midway point and then you go back and you know, find out the old stuff. And the funny thing is, you know, I did have the same experience that a lot of people have where, you know, your parents, they don't want you listening to this kind of stuff. And it's like, why are you putting those crazy posters on your wall? But I do have to give my mom some credit, because I specifically remember back in those days when she would go to the library to get books, she would oftentimes bring me home Kiss albums, you know, because you could rent records at the library back in those days.
Right. I remember
and
that.
I can remember her bringing home Love Gun, Rock and Roll Over. And I'd put it on my little, you know, one of those little portable record players where the top flips up, and I'd listen to it. And those records would be those so thrashed, you know, from being at the library, that have skips and pops and scratches on them. But I can remember listening to those And it's funny to think back on it now. I mean, think of the album cover art on Love Gun, and your mom's bringing that home to her, you know, 11-year-old son, you know, to listen to. But anyway, so that's where I dove in at, was that Alive 2. I mean, I specifically remember, I even remember going to the store to buy that album. It was a store called Gemco, which was like the equivalent of like a Target back in those days.
Yeah.
And I remember buying Alive 2 and just staring at those. Remember the picture on the front with Gene, with the blood, he's all sweaty, the blood's coming out of his mouth. And so that's where I dove in, was Alive 2. And from that moment on, I was hooked.
That's amazing. And I think you said it so well. Your parents didn't want you to listen to them, but they did encourage you to like listen to music and stuff like that. They wanted you to develop your own taste and stuff like that. So that's a really great story about the library. So let's talk about this first Kiss album here, Tom. I'm holding up my extremely battered copy. Oh, and this is something I wanted to mention and tell you guys. My copy of the first Kiss album still has the Columbia Record Club sticker on the back. They used to put these little CRC stickers on vinyl. So I definitely took advantage of this. One of my 12 for a dollar or whatever it was, or a penny. But one thing I want to mention too, Tom, this record was recorded between October and November of 73. And there's one song that was recorded after that. And just a little bit, I guess, separate from these sessions. And the song is called Kissin' Time. And weirdly enough, that was the single that was released from this album. Yes. Isn't that weird? And never even went anywhere near the charts, never even registered anywhere. It's probably a rare thing to have a copy of the Kissin' Time single. I don't know if it had a picture sleeve, but talk to me about this album, Tom. It's lean, you know, much more sort of New York City, you know, street rock kind of a sound than some of the other stuff. And the band was very much kind of in formation at this time.
Well, that's impressive that you have that the old copy there still.
Yeah.
I think I would have been able to maybe top you if I had my original copy, because I remember my original copy of that first album. It was on an 8-track tape.
Oh, dude.
And I remember I bought it at the San Jose flea market, and it probably wasn't even a legit nice. You know, release,
right? But bootleg 8-track. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Here's the thing. This is the thought I have on this first album. Because, like I said, you know, I didn't, you know, I had to go back in time to dig into this first album. Because, like I said, my first album was Alive 2. It wasn't even Alive, right? It was Alive 2. And one of the guests you had on earlier this week, and I can't remember which one, but I think you guys kind of discussed how you can kind of look at Kiss in chunks of time.
Yep.
And it's delineated a lot of times by those two live albums, at least those first two live albums. And so this is my thought, especially on this first album, but I could say it about the first three albums, is I think those first three albums kind of get a short shrift sometimes, because everybody looks at Alive as the moment that Kiss took off. And I guess they did, you know, commercially and as far as record sales. But when you look back on those first three albums, and this one in particular, since this is the one we're focusing on today, is this thing is chock full of Kiss classics.
It totally is. I know.
There's like six or seven songs on this record that they still, if they had a concert tomorrow, they probably play at least five of them, yeah. You know? So that's something that, so I think that people kind of don't give those early three albums the credit that they deserve. I mean, these, yeah, maybe this album didn't sell big when it first came out, but there's seven staples on this song that this band is going to play almost every night. And you're going to be mad if they don't play them, you know?
Exactly. I know. If they don't, you're going to feel cheated. Yeah.
Now it's also comes up a little short in the production, you know, the quality of production, maybe has a little bit of a thin sound to it. And I mean, can you imagine this album with these songs and this material, at least most of it, having the production of a Destroyer or a Love Gun? I mean, that'd be awesome.
That is a very interesting proposition, man, because you're exactly right. I mean, first song, first side, Strutter. I mean, what are you going to say?
There's an opener. Is there an opener or what?
Right. Exactly. One of the greatest openers of all time. And then we've got Nothing to Lose. Not a bad little song. Firehouse is a very popular Kiss song. Cold Gin, which is very interesting. Ace Frehley composition. And Let Me Know closes the side. So that's a right there. You've got a pretty strong side. I mean, you got Firehouse and Cold Gin and Strutter on side one of Kiss's first album, Tom. That's pretty quality stuff.
Yeah. Like I said, those are almost all classics that they'd be playing today. I mean, heck, they do play them today. I mean, what, maybe the exception of Let Me Know, every other one of those other songs are Kiss classics, you know? And then going back to the production, you know, the production value on it, you know, they did go back and re-record Strutter. Remember when
I remember on double platinum. Yeah, exactly.
Strutter 78, 1970. Yeah. So they did go back and redo that one. Yeah. I mean, this album is a classic. I mean, you know, it truly is.
Yep. So here's what I want to ask you next, Tom, is, so Kiss, you're listening to when you're pretty young. What kind of early 70s like influences do you hear in this music?
Well, I think that I think Kiss has a pretty big Beatles influence that people don't really talk about, too. Even down to the photo on the cover of this album. I mean, that's a Beatles cop right there. I mean, and I think they'd even admit it, you know. I know later, like with Rock and Roll All Night, Party Every Day, even the line, "You drive us wild, we'll drive you crazy." I think Gene's even admitted that, yeah, we kind of stole that from "Baby, You Can Drive My Car,"
right?
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, I love Kiss, but I also know that Kiss is not above, you know, let's say, borrowing or trying to go after something that's popular. But I mean, they definitely have a Beatles influence that I don't think people recognize, or you know, and it may be because of their look. You know, they have such an extreme look that you would never associate with the Beatles. But I mean, they have songs that are very Beatlesque. You know,
absolutely. That's a great shout, man. Because believe I've read books where they have admitted exactly what you're talking about. Like, yeah, they were a huge influence. We wanted to do that cover that way because of Meet the Beatles and, you know, the arrangement and everything. But right, you don't have a guy who's pretending to be a demon and a guy who has cat makeup.
Yeah.
But, and let's talk about the cover for a minute, because it's, you know, Peter Criss's makeup is radically different from what it, the classic look. And Gene's wasn't quite as developed. And Ace Frehley, you know, spray painted his hair silver, which I don't think was a thing that lasted that long.
Yeah, I think Ace just showed up with his hair like that without, you know, without telling anybody, you know, and that's typical. That's, as we've learned, that's typical Ace, right? Peter's makeup is much more labor intensive, I think, in that shot. That probably something you wouldn't want to be doing every night. I mean, hey, I got to hand it to these guys. The fact that they would put this makeup on, I mean, think about that. I was just talking to my kids last night at the dinner table. I was telling them I was going to be on here with you today and talking about Kiss. And I was saying how that they just don't understand, because of their age, they'll never understand what Kiss was
right
to people like us. And I was telling them how, like, they had no idea. I mean, they know Kiss wore the makeup and they wore the costumes and spit the blood and spit the fire, but I don't think they realized the whole secrecy thing that was going on with Kiss back then, and hiding their identities, and you didn't know what they really looked like. And you remember the pictures in, like, you know, Cream magazine back then, where they'd be out on the town and they'd have like a bandana wrapped around their face. I mean, they were precursors to what we got going on right now, right? With everyone walking around with masks on their face.
Yeah.
But I don't think my kids, and, you know, I mean, my son's 30 years old. I don't think he even realized that whole aspect of it went along with the, like,
wow,
we don't know who they really are, you know? And that was just so much fun. And
it
and
was.
The guest we had on earlier this week, and I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was, but I said this to my kids last night at dinner. He said it perfectly, where he said, I was 12 years old and I didn't stand a chance.
Right. Yeah. The Bish, man. Yeah. It's exactly right. Yeah. It was over. I love that Beatles reference. When you listen to this record, you hear a lot of melody. I wouldn't call it power pop, and I wouldn't necessarily call it glam. I think it falls somewhere kind of in between those, you know, with a little just downright American rock and roll that was happening at the time, you know, thrown into the mix, plus four guys that grew up in New York City. I don't know. How close do you think they get to glam, Tom? Especially on this album.
You know, I don't know. I mean, to me, it's just more straight ahead New York grimy rock and roll.
Yep, me too.
You know, mm-hmm. I don't think the music itself gets too glammy, but I do have to say, on a little sidebar, you know, as far as the Black Diamond thing with the Replacements, is I got a buddy of mine that I grew up with, and he just never liked Kiss, right? He actively hates Kiss, and he gives me so much crap about liking them.
Almost like Jim.
And I remember. Yeah. Well, Jim's conspicuously absent this week, and my buddy's not sitting in the closet here with me either. So they have that in common.
There it is.
But it was funny because, you know, he's a big Replacements fan, and I love the Replacements too. And I love one of my favorite moments was when I said to him one day, I'm like, hey, man, I go, what do you think of that song Black Diamond by the Replacements? Do you like that song? He's like, oh, dude, yeah, that song's awesome, you know. And he went on and on about how great it was. And I'm like, by the way, because I knew he did not know it was a Kiss cover. I go, yeah, that's a pretty great Kiss song, isn't it? And you should have seen it. His jaw just dropped. He's like, what? I'm like, yeah, dude, that's a Kiss song.
That's so good.
He had no idea.
Oh,
But I was going to tell you, we were talking a little bit before we came on here about like my history as a Kiss fan. And I think one of the things that I might have that's a little bit different for me than it, most people, at least it seems like it, is, you know, I usually hear people and then, you know, they come on podcasts or they're getting interviewed or whatever. You know, I mean, how many rock stars these days do we hear, especially like the metal guys? And they all say, yeah, when I was a kid, Kiss is
right.
That was my gateway drug. And all my friends, we all love Kiss. Well, that was not the case for me. When I was a kid and I got into Kiss, I was an outcast amongst my classmates. Where I grew up in the Bay Area, East Bay in particular. When I was growing up in grade school, my classmates loved Earth, Wind, and Fire, the stylistics, more like soul music. And I like that stuff too. But they did not like Kiss. And I'm telling you, man, the agony I went through being a Kiss fan.
Oh, man.
You know, my aunt and uncle owned this business where they embroidered, you know, and they made like jackets and, you know, like softball team uniforms. And actually they graduated up to the point where they actually, for quite a few years, they made all the uniforms for the Oakland Raiders.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah. All the uniforms, all the coaches' clothing that they wore on the sideline. But one year for my birthday, they made me like this windbreaker jacket and they put the Kiss logo on the back of it.
Dude.
And I wore that to school and I hate to say it, it got graffitied when I wasn't looking.
No way. Yes. Really? Oh, yeah. Man.
So I never had that feeling of like, I'm part of the Kiss army. You know, I mean, I felt like an outsider being a Kiss fan as a kid.
That is so interesting, man. And certainly, I think, you know, historically, at least I've learned anyway, that the Bay Area was such a stronghold for soul music and you know, Stax, Volt, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's very, very interesting to have been an outsider, because I think everybody, at least, you know, that we've talked about this week, felt that camaraderie with Kiss, and that was another reason you kind of stuck with him, right? Because
I never felt that.
So interesting, man.
So whenever I hear Paul Stanley in his interviews, when he starts talking about, you know, us Kiss people, we stick together because we have to fight the rest of the world. It sounds like a bunch of nonsense, but to me, it's like, yeah, you're darn right. I did have to do that, Paul.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Fighting the good fight for Kiss. That's really, really interesting, man. And what a shame. It sounds like an awesome jacket.
It really was. It said, Kiss is number one.
Oh, man. That's the best. Well, let's look at side two. So the aforementioned Kissing Time, right? It's, and let's see. We've got Deuce now, again, as Tom said, Kiss classics. I mean, the one that starts many hearts in motion for Kiss, and also I believe is the opening cut on Alive. So there you go. Now, song three, Love Theme from Kiss. This has been one of my favorite Kiss songs forever, Tom.
You're kidding.
Such a cool instrumental. Why you don't like it? I think it's so funny and so cool that they would put, you know, like an instrumental like this on a debut album.
It's kind of strange. It's like, what is this?
It's probably the reason I like it so much. It's so weird amongst all these other tracks. And let's see. Then we've got, and you know, the other interesting kind of factual note, background note that I dug up about this song, Love Theme from Kiss, Tom, is the only song Kiss has ever written that got the original four members writing credit. So it's not Barry Mills, Buck and Stipe. It's, you know, it's literally, this is the only time it's Stanley, Simmons, Chris, and Freely on a writing credit. I thought that was really interesting.
Well, it's nice to see they can agree on something.
Yeah, probably the only thing of all time. Then we got 100,000 Years and Black Diamond. So it's 10 songs. It's very compact. I mean, I guess when you're going into the studio with 2 weeks to record and 1 week to mix and get it out, it's a pretty big challenge.
Well, the other thing is, and I don't know if you've touched on this already, but have you ever looked at the timeline as far as when this album came out and then Hotter Than Hell and then Dressed to Kill? I mean, they put these three albums out in I mean, darn near 18 months.
Unbelievable. You know? Unbelievable. Yeah. And between toured the whole time and wrote songs when they were on the road, you know, that blows my mind.
I think Destroyer, Rock and Roll Over, Love Gun, which we think of those as being, you know, more highly produced and whatnot. Those all came out within a short time span too.
Yep. That's right. How hard they worked is pretty amazing. And they also wrote some pretty good songs. I mean, they were truly craftsmen in that sense.
Well, it almost makes me wonder if, like nowadays, I would think a record company, they'd sit on these albums a little bit and milk them a little more before putting out another one. And especially when you get to the later ones, like Destroyer and Love Gun Rock. I mean, those albums were selling. I mean, those albums actually sold. It makes you wonder, why did they push those releases so close to each other? And I don't know if that maybe had something to do with Neil Bogart and Casablanca Records, because it always seemed like Casablanca Records was kind of on the precipice of, you know, going under.
Always. Yeah.
And so maybe that had something to do with it. But you think that they would have gave those each a little more time, you know, to milk them for what they can get out of them.
Totally.
Rather than rush them through.
Totally. And we got into this a little bit yesterday. You know, one of the things that was happening at that time was, you know, is records were such a mainstream product, right? They weren't the product of collectors and, you know, fetishists like these days. But, you know, they were the medium that people listened to music on. Everybody had a turntable, you know, just like everyone has a mobile phone now. And one thing that, you know, that record retailers would do is return records. And one thing I read about Casablanca was, hey, if we have another Kiss album coming out in 6 or 7 months, maybe they're not going to send this one back, because we're going to tell them, hey, you know, they're going to want the back catalog. This new one is fantastic. Like, it's going to sell more than any other record, you know, that's ever been made.
Well, that marketing strategy didn't work out too well with the solo albums, though,
no,
did it?
It didn't. That's where they got totally hammered. It's amazing. And I'm just looking here. I pulled up a really amazing site. If any of you Kiss fans don't know about this site called KissConcertHistory.com, you should definitely check it out. It breaks all the shows down by year and chronologically shows you when the album came out and gives you some really cool background information. So if you want to take a deep dive, it's amazing. But so the record came out February 18th. They basically got on the road February 20th and started playing, and they played all throughout March, all throughout April, all throughout May. And I'm talking May, there's 31 shows in 31 days. So they played every night. June, 30 shows. July, 25 shows. August, 4 shows. September, 30 shows. So they went out and just played and played and played and played everywhere and anywhere, especially in the Midwest and Canada that would have them.
Well, they worked. I mean, they weren't afraid to work. That's
it. Exactly. And, you know, I think that's one thing when you listen to this record too, that you can kind of hear is that, hey, here's a band that actually was putting their blood, sweat, and tears into what they were doing. And, you know, what do you think? I mean, I guess if this record dropped from the sky today, Tom, like what would it, you know, what would it sound like to you as a rock and roll record?
That's a good question, because I mean, are there any rock and roll records these days? You know, I mean, what would we have to compare this to? Foo Fighters, you know, the Struts, there isn't much, you know. Who knows, maybe it would be more successful today based on the sound and maybe less on the appearance.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it might be. It would be a great Instagram band, right? Kiss would be like the ultimate Instagram.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, these classic songs that we've been mentioning, I still listen to them all the time.
Oh, totally. You know? Yeah. I mean, that was interesting too. I mean, when I went back and listened to this record yesterday and today, knowing this was coming up, put it on the turntable, it was so instantly familiar. And it wasn't necessarily that it took me back completely to a certain place in time, but it's just the songs that have been with me for a long time. And I don't know what your reaction was the first time you kind of put this back on.
Well, my thing is, whenever I hear these songs and I think back to those days where I was the lone excommunicated Kiss fan of my class, and I listen to these songs and I think to myself, why didn't my classmates like this guy? This stuff sounds great. You know, it makes me think that they were like just fighting against, like they didn't want to like what the popular thing was. Maybe that's what it was, you know, and they're going to go against the grain and like, oh, everybody likes Kiss. Well, I'm not going to like them. But because to me, I listen to these songs now and I love them. I mean, I regularly have these songs, you know, I'm constantly fooling around on my phone with my running playlist, you know. I got these songs on my running playlist all the time. I currently have, you know, not from this album, but, you know, Do You Love Me? That's on my running playlist
right
now.
That's amazing.
I mean, that song's what, 40 years old?
Yep.
It's on my, it pumps me up to run on the treadmills to this day.
And, you know, I think that's part of it, you know.
Yeah. Well, this album, this is Kiss, and this is real Kiss right here,
yeah,
okay?
Totally.
This isn't Kiss trying to chase the disco sound with I Was Made for Loving You. This isn't Kiss trying to chase the grunge sound when they did Carnival of Souls. This isn't Kiss trying to chase the Bon Jovi sound with Hot in the Shade. This is them being them, you know. You know, because, you know, let's face it, Kiss, they kind of get into pulling some shenanigans on down the line where you don't know who the heck's even really playing on the album. But at least, you know, with this early stuff, this is them. This is these four guys playing. This is them. This is their sound. This is their material. Like you said, this stuff goes back to Wicked Lester. This is them at their core. Okay. And I mean, I love it and I still love it. And I'm 54 years old, and when I'm 74 years old, I'm still going to be listening to it.
There's a lot to love on this album. I mean, a ton of classics.
Well, you have the great mixture of the flamboyance of the makeup and the costumes and the stage show.
Yep.
But then the grittiness of the music, you know. So you get both extremes in these early days.
Exactly right, and so well said, Tom. And plus, you get a ton of rhinestones on the cover. They've got rhinestones. Let me put you on the spot here, Tom. Give me your top three favorite songs personally for you from this album, and then give us one to play out with as we kind of put the capper on Kiss Week here with the debut album.
Oh my gosh! Okay, my three favorite. Well, right off the top of my head, I would say Deuce, Black Diamond, and then one that I think doesn't get the appreciation it deserves, and I love it, 100,000 Years.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And you know, one quick point, though, before we sign off here, too, is I will say this, okay? As a Kiss fan, I'm a realist, okay? And I also understand that when you listen to Kiss play these days, let's just face it, Paul just doesn't have it anymore. His voice is kind of shot. But I'll tell you what, from the year 1974 to, let's say, 1990, I'll give him up to 90, that guy had one of the best voices in rock and roll.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
And I just, I love those old, you know, I love Kiss, but even though I picked Deuce as one of my songs, I always seem to prefer the ones that Paul sings.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, in his prime, that guy was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? Absolutely. But anything else, though, Tom, you know, about this album, about Kiss in general, as we kind of close the week out?
No, you know, I just Kiss is just one of those, Kiss is one of those bands that I've loved since I was a kid. I'm always going to love them. They do things that I don't like? Yes, they do. Do I sometimes get tired of the monetary thing and Gene kind of seems scrambling after every dollar he can put in his pocket? Yes, I do. But you know what? It's never enough to turn me off on him. You know what I mean? I still like him. And like I said, I'll be listening to him probably until the day I die. And as a matter of fact, when we sign off from here, I'm going to go listen to him right now.
I was going to say, I'm putting this album on again. I got side two ready to queue up. And well said, Tom. I mean, I feel exactly the same way, exactly how you stated it. Tom, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show and your continued participation in our community. You're a valuable member, always one of our favorite people to talk to. So thank you so much for doing this, man. I really appreciate it.
Well, this has been, it's been great to be on. It's been great to actually talk to you live. I'm usually leaving messages on the, hotline.
This is a historic event.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so this has been a lot of fun. I mean, I think one thing Kiss fans have in common is they never seem to tire of talking about Kiss.
That's it. That's probably the most overriding thing about Kiss. Yeah. Is that nobody gets tired of talking or listening to Kiss.
So, or arguing about them.
Yeah. Right. So once again, thank you so much, Tom. And Tom Nuremberg, everyone, amazing guy. And it really has been fun to cap off the week this way. So put you on the spot. What should we play out with here, Tom? You know, as we close out Kiss Week.
I just lauded Paul and his vocals and everything. So let's go ahead and just do the opposite of that and play out with a Gene song and play Deuce.
Beautiful. All right. Well, it's a great way to cap Kiss Week, folks. To learn about Suburb Pod, the best thing to do, just go to suburbspod.com and you can find us at Suburbs Pod on the socials. My name is Patrick Foster. It's been a pleasure and honor, and I want to thank Jim for tolerating Kiss Week very, very much. We'll be back with something very special next week, actually. We've got another amazing theme week that I think you guys are going to love, and some of you are there for the recording of it. But that's going to be next week, and want to wish everyone a great weekend. I am Patrick Foster, and with me has been
Tom Nuremberg.
Thank you very much, Tom. We will talk to you guys next week.
Get a good logo and stick with it.